Set your photo apps down, iPhone photographers. It's time for Tiny Shutter Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Tiny Shutter Podcast, where we talk about iPhone photography and a few other things, probably my unemployment. I'm Mark Sadowski.
And I am Matt Hoffman.
Wow, what a crazy week it's been. It's my real life has been really getting in the way of things.
That doesn't sound like fun.
No, not this week. It's basically my last week of work before I'm officially laid off. And yeah, lots of fun.
Think of how much time you'll have for iPhone photography.
I actually hope I do have a lot of time for that, because for one thing, the videos that I took a few weeks ago in the White Mountains, I need to redo them.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't even seen them, but I agree.
The problem is that my GoPro has pretty much crapped the bed. It's so I kind of went 50-50 with my iPhone and the GoPro, and the GoPro just the I don't know, something in the glass is now not working properly, and all the videos are just crap with the GoPro. And the iPhone videos are fine, but it's the GoPro that messed up.
What do you mean with the glass?
I don't know. There's just a lot of artifacting going on in the videos. And it's not able to focus.
Well, that doesn't sound good.
No, not at all. So I need to go back and reshoot. I hope there are still leaves on the trees.
Yeah, yeah, you're in a time crunch then, if that's what you want.
I don't know, some. I think what I'll do is I'll just do some, like, introduction video. Like I'll do an introductory part saying that, you know, explain some of the footage was lost. But there's still some good stuff in there to play with. Definitely a lot of scenery that really needs to be shown.
Oh, all right. Well, that's cool.
And I got to say, I am really, really impressed with the video capability of the iPhone. The video quality is just so nice.
Yes. Yes, it is. Especially the newer ones. Like, I think I mentioned a week or two ago that my wife had finally gotten a iPhone 6S. And, we both take a lot of pictures of our son and whatever. And we have like a shared album, that we post pictures to so other people in our families can see them and everything. And it's just like night and day, you know, seeing the pictures and the videos that she's been posting from her new phone versus, you know, her 4S that she upgraded from. It's everything just looks so much better.
Yeah. And I'm not even using the 4K.
Oh, yeah. I don't do that either.
And I just can't wait to post some of that stuff. Yeah, we'll see what happens next week. I think I could sneak up there sometime during the week. And, if the weather permits, I'll absolutely do it.
Very cool. Well, I hope you're able to, and I can't wait to check out those vids.
Nice. So this week, we have a couple things that we can touch on. The first thing, you know what? I suppose I could do this. You saw an interesting article on Petapixel about a Polaroid smartphone camera.
No, it's Kodak.
Kodak. Did I say Polaroid?
You did.
They had That's their time.
Okay. Yeah, so did Kodak.
I know, right? Well, Polaroid was the first to come out with the camera with a smartphone attached to it. And I don't think that ever saw the light of day. I think it was announced, but I don't think it ever officially launched. And now Kodak is trying to capitalize on this extremely rich market of cameras with smartphones.
Yeah, I don't remember. I meant to kind of look up some of the past phone / cameras that have either come out or been rumored to be coming out, you know, over the last few years, so I could kind of compare what those did or would have offered compared to this new Kodak. At first, I when I saw the article, I was like excited about it. I was like, this is cool, because I don't know, it's like my fantasy to have a camera that's a phone than the other way around.
Yeah.
You know, because the camera is the feature I use the most, you know, on my iPhone. And talking on the phone, you know, I think I text more than I talk. So even as a salesperson, and you'd think I'd be on the phone a lot, but even like my customers text and email and stuff. So there's not really a whole lot of talking going on. So like, I would just rather have a camera that, you know, I could make a phone call if I need to.
Right.
So I was really excited, and you know, I started looking at this thing, and I was like, well, this is cool, because it looks like a thin form factored point and shoot camera. So basically what it has a the lens that's on the front, like the front facing lens, you know, the one that's not on the screen side.
Yep.
That has a f2.0 aperture. Not sure on what the focal length is on it exactly, but it can record 4K and 2K video. Has 6-axis stabilization. There's a 21 megapixel sensor in there, which is pretty dang cool. It does have a like a selfie camera, and then it has a I think it's like a 5-inch, you know, high definition touchscreen on it.
Yeah.
So like all that stuff is cool, and I was like, all right, you know, this is cool. And then of course it runs Android, which, you know, that was to be expected. Not that I'm looking to switch to Android, but you know, whatever. And then I started getting to where it was talking about like how the camera controls work and everything. And basically, you know, what it is, you know, it's all kind of done on the touchscreen, and you basically have like these simulated like a simulated dial, like to switch to like manual mode or like different scene modes, you know, like most like DSLRs have those scene modes, like, you know, sports and macro,
yeah,
portrait, nighttime, right? So it's got all that fun stuff. But you know, it was touting like, you know, oh, it has manual control, but it's not really any different than manual control on like the iPhone, you mm-hmm. know, because it's a fixed aperture. So your manual control is basically your ISO and your shutter speed.
Yes.
You know, so I was like, you know, okay, whatever. I mean, I don't know. I guess that's okay, but if I'm going to have something that is more a camera than a phone, then I need some kind of aperture control.
Yeah. Bill in the chat room says it reminds him of the 645 Pro app.
Yeah, in a way, that's almost what it looks like. The other thing that I thought was kind of crazy is that it only has 32 gigabytes of memory, although it is expandable with micro SD cards. So that actually they didn't mention, I don't think, in the Petapixel article. They only mentioned that it had 32 gigabytes of memory, and I was like, well, that's insanity.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's going to take you like a day of shooting to fill that up if it's a 21 megapixel sensor. But it does have 3 gigabytes of RAM, so it should be able to process these photos relatively decently, I would suppose. And then it has, I think it has Snapseed built in. So,
well, that's too much of a stretch. It is Google Android.
Yeah, so it comes with Snapseed. And then, you know, I've just never really dived into what's available on Android. So I don't really know, like, what else is out there as far as, like, good image editing apps.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure the Adobe products are over there. If I'm not mistaken, they have the Creative Cloud Suite options there. So that means Lightroom and Photoshop, the various Photoshop tools are all over there. So you have at least that. And, you know, they have good quality editing.
You know, another thing that I didn't see mentioned is the formats that this could shoot in. Like, does it shoot RAW?
Yeah.
Because that, you know, to me, that's important now.
Yeah. It's weird. You know what? Ever since Fuji, I haven't been that big on RAW files lately. And this is something that, you know, every time I see something like this, whether it was Polaroid back in the day doing their camera, or, you know, now Kodak, and even Leica with their, you know, weird hybrid they have with Huawei going on. These camera companies, can we even still call Kodak a camera company anymore? I think they just primarily do film and then license their stuff out there. But, like, I don't think they get what made them great to begin with. You know, the tech specs on this thing is, you know, I mean, it's cool. It's not horrible. But on the other side, it's, you know, doesn't do anything to impress me either. But it all comes back to Fujifilm for me. Like, you look at one of their cameras and they, you know, they really know what made them great to begin with. So all the Fuji cameras have this processing capability to make their images in the same format as their film. So you have their Velvia options, their Portra options, they have classic Chrome, which is supposed to be, you know, the equivalent of Kodachrome. And, you know, they have all these great processing features. And it's not a filter. It is actual processing power of the sensor that makes it what it is. So it's not just like slap on a filter and, you know, call it a day. They actually take a lot of time and care into the production of these photos. And so you have a company like Kodak, which I have to say, as much as I love Fujifilm, I love the films that Kodak made. Kodachrome, oh my God, I am in love with Kodachrome. I still weep that it's gone. I use the T-Max filters on all my wedding photos. You know, I just love the way, you know, their black and white images look and feel. They have this liveliness, this texture, this contrast that is just absolutely brilliant. And, you know, I try to mimic that in Lightroom, but imagine being able to do this natively with this smartphone camera. Like, I think it's a missed opportunity that they're not trying to develop their own digital version of Kodachrome and all the other film types.
Yeah, without a doubt, that would be something, you know, that would be cool if that was offered right off the bat here. I mean, honestly, I agree with you. I think it should be. In that vein, though, what they are including in this is an app called Super 8, which they say provides professional effects reminiscent of Kodak's iconic Super 8 film stocks. So, you know, this is going to be more of a video app, but, you know, that is, that's similar to what you're talking about, but it's not like, you know, their black and white films are just like classic, you know, and I feel fortunate that I started out in photography shooting film.
Yeah.
And, you know, learning photography by shooting black and white. And I've shot all those films, T-Max 200, T-Max, or rather T-Max 100, T-Max 400.
Yeah.
You know, and there was Tri-X and some other ones. And, you know, and I would always try different films, you know, from time to time, like Ilford and stuff like that, and always go back to the Kodak films because, you know, they just had the best contrast. And, you know, if you kind of got to know the films, you could, you know, and if you knew what you were going to be shooting with a roll of film, then you could pick the film that suited the style of what you were going to shoot.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, their films had life in them, and it's just so iconic. I mean, look at the new Star Wars movie, the Episode 7. That was all done on Kodak film. And yeah. I mean, you could really feel that vibrancy in there. Yeah, it's just, have you seen the movie Man from U.N.C.L.E., the new one with that was made by Guy Ritchie?
No, I never even heard of it.
Oh my God, it's such a shame that it didn't make it. It starred Henry Cavill, the dude who was Grumpy Superman in the new movies, and it starred Armie Hammer, and this is probably their best acting performances ever. The whole thing is filmed in the style of Kodachrome. And it just looks beautiful. Like just seeing it takes place in the 60s, the whole movie. And like they really gave it that look and feel of the 60s. And the way they shot it, the way they did the post-processing, rather, having that old style Kodachrome appearance just added so much life to the movie. In fact, there's a throwaway line in the movie where Henry Cavill is getting tortured, and the guy who's torturing him is showing him his collection of black and white photos of people being tortured. He's like, "Oh yeah, it's a passion of mine. You, however, will not be shot this way. I'm using Kodachrome. The color just jumps right off the page." And oh my God, if you got a chance, you got to watch that movie. It is absolutely worth it. I loved it. I still watch it. It's one of those that's just on repeat. And yeah, and Bill Counts in the chat room says Portra is amazing. I love Portra. That is like my go-to film for color in Kodak. And then the T-Max is what I use for my black and white. And yeah, it's so, I mean, God, I mean, the fact that we're just wishing for this stuff is just sad. They really, it baffles me because it's not like they don't have, you know, proof that this works. I mean, Fujifilm is making hand over fist over with their camera system. And the ironic thing is that their digital system is being supported by their cash cow, which is their Fujifilm instant cameras, which is all, you know, instant film technology. And and everybody's jumping on that bandwagon. You have Polaroid that's doing the same thing, since we all by default call them Polaroids. You have the, what's it called, Lomography doing the same thing. You have, was it Project, what's that project? Project in...
Oh, I know what you're talking about, and I forget.
Project Impossible, or whatever the hell it's called.
Yeah, yeah.
The Impossible Project, yeah. You know, they're trying to, you know, do their thing, and now Leica jumps into the picture with their piece of crap that's overpriced. And the fact that Kodak isn't doing this is just ridiculous. It's such a shame. I weep for them.
I'll defend them just slightly here. So this phone/camera is actually being produced by a UK company called Bullet Group, and they're licensing the Kodak brand name.
Yeah. So Kodak made their money regardless.
Yeah. So I think we're talking about this because it's, you know, it fits along the scope of our podcast, I guess, even though it's not an iPhone, it's a camera phone that aims to be more of a camera than a phone. However, it is noted in the Petapixel article that there's no word on whether this will be released in the United States.
Yeah.
And if it were to be released, it's going to run probably somewhere in the neighborhood of like $500-$550.
Yeah. So not worth it.
So it's kind of expensive. And then, you know, the thing that bothers me is, like, pretty much in every article that I've seen about this, there is literally no mention of, like, the focal length of the lens.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just weird to me. And then there's no mention of, you know, the formats that it captures in. Obviously, it probably captures JPEG, but what else does it do?
Yeah, I'm not saying it's fishy. I just think it's completely half-assed, and like, it's just a waste of potential.
You know, when I first saw this, I was excited because it looked cool. But then the more I read into it, the more disappointment set in, because I want something like this. I mean, I remember, you know, years ago now when we first started doing this podcast, I think we talked about, you know, this kind of thing.
And this was our dream. This was our white whale.
Yeah, we were talking about, you know, wouldn't it be awesome if Apple would produce a camera that, you know, was a phone, but it had, you know, iOS on it, but it was mostly a camera.
Yeah.
You know, so for years and years, I mean, how long have we been doing this podcast? Like 20 years?
At least.
Yeah.
So, I think 40 for me.
Wow.
We've been doing it for a while. Yeah.
Somehow I thought I was in at the beginning, but I guess not.
It was all in my head. I was doing a lot of trial and error.
Yeah, that's when the show was the best.
Then we started recording them. it just baffles me that people even want to try this. Like, of all the companies that tried doing this, all of them have failed. Like, every single one of them. It's like, what made them think that this would be the, you know, game changer? It just, I don't know. It's just weird. Like, this is always the there's always a catch 22 in this, in that, you know, you have the device, or the device is, you know, then we find out that the device is crap. You know, the Android system is a piece of crap that it's running under. It's an old version, or it's a really horrible, you know, just Frankenstein version of Android, since it's all open source, or then the camera itself is crap, and it's just this long list. And then if finally they do something right, it ends up being the price that just throws you off. And it's like, why bother paying for this kind of device when you could probably get a regular camera that's, you know,
Yeah.
Cheaper. Like for $500, we could, you know, if you want a, you know, camera with a smartphone in it, you know, just keep the smartphone that you already have and just buy a point and shoot camera. You can get a Fujifilm X70 for about $500-$600 and have all the film capabilities that we were just talking about. And you could use it for selfies.
Yeah.
You know, okay. Just to stay on theme with the camera phone.
I'm just not agreeing with your choice of a Fuji, I suppose.
You got to rent the X70. It's actually really good.
Really?
Yeah. It's a point-and-shoot size. It's a fixed focal length of, I think it's 28 millimeters, but you can go, you could do a digital zoom of 35 and 50 millimeters, and it does a really good job with a digital zoom. And I was really happy with it. And the selfie mode is really good because it automatic, because when you flip the screen up for selfie mode, it automatically goes into face detecting mode, and it does a really good job of focusing.
Right on.
You could rent it. I mean, that's what I did. I rented it for my birthday, and I had a great time with it.
Are you just saying that people in general could rent it, or that specifically I can rent it?
Whatever makes you rent it is the answer. Lensrentals.com is where I go to rent all of my camera stuff. And they will ship it to you, and you ship it back. And it's absolutely worth it. I use it for my own personal stuff and wedding photography. And it's a great way to test out gear without, you know, breaking the bank. And yeah. They have their own Amazon Prime service type deal where you pay, like, I think $70 or $80 a year, and it's free shipping with all their products. Otherwise, you're paying like $25 for shipping on each of the cameras.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. You know, pro tip.
Very good.
All right. We spent a lot of time talking about that one.
Yeah. I didn't think we'd talk that much about it, but
yeah,
we did. So there, deal with it.
Right on. So the other thing that I wanted to touch on is something that we should have talked about a little while ago, but, you know, for whatever reason, we just kind of lost track of it. But I think it was episode 170, we talked about hashtagging our photos, and we were using, you know, I was trying out a bunch of different apps to make hashtagging much, much easier. And I thought we would go into talking about that.
All right.
So I just gave you the lowdown, and here's the too long didn't read version. All the apps that I tried were crap. It's all that right. Simple. It is. One of the things that we need to do as Instagram photographer / posters, or, you know, whatever you want to call it, in order to make your photos more to promote your photos, you have to have the right kind of hashtags to attract an audience, basically. And what these apps try to do is give you, like, you would put in a keyword and it would spit out a series of keywords that are related to the one that you typed in. So say you did nature as your keyword, it would come out as nature walker, nature lover, nature, you know, a bunch of other related hashtags. And what these apps didn't really do is give you a count as to how many people were using those hashtags. So for example, if you do like the word nature in Instagram, you're going to come out with like a ridiculous amount of people. Like, let's see, let's do it right now. Nature. And it has like almost 200 million posts. And if you're going to use nature as your hashtag, you will not be seen. That image will just fly in and out of their radars, and you know, Dave in the chat room says the best. It's business opportunity for a bot.
Because there's so many photos being uploaded with that hashtag that it's just, yeah, they're just flying by, basically.
Yeah. It's so really, the what you really want to do when you're doing hashtags is find a healthy amount of audience for that hashtag that's not too much, not too cold. Like, I guess you could call it the Goldilocks zone. if there's a lot of people posting in it, chances are your photo will not be seen. But if there's too little using that hashtag, chances are it's not going to get seen.
Yeah.
So you really want, like, anything in the, I don't know, I've been testing this, and like, I would say anything in 6 digits is acceptable. So six digits, I would say.
I have a different like theory on Instagram hashtagging, and in that I think hashtagging on Instagram and doing that in order to get your photo seen is different than like hashtagging, let's say, like on Flickr or, you know, some other photo sharing site.
Mm-hmm.
And here's why I say that. So like a lot of other photo sharing sites, like let's say like IM, all right, IM is a good example.
Yeah.
IM has like the marketplace, right, where you can, you know, submit your photos to the marketplace, and then, you know, that's like an opportunity to kind of like sell them for stock. So when you're hashtagging on IM, to have your photos found by a potential buyer, you kind of want to be like literal with your hashtags, right? So you want to tag like sunset and Ohio and, you know, all these like literal things about the picture, right?
Right.
Because that's what, you know, maybe what someone is looking for. But on Instagram, if you tag your photo sunset, well, that's one of those, you know, one of those tags that gets a million bazillion photos tagged sunset, and no one's ever going to see your picture because it's just going to fly, you know, right by.
Yep.
So what I've been doing lately, and this has been working out reasonably well for me so far, is to find accounts that basically feature images that are similar to the kind of pictures that you take, right?
Yep.
So, you know, I'm here in Ohio, and I'm shooting a lot of, you know, Ohio scenic nonsense or whatever. So basically I've been seeking out like Ohio themed Instagram accounts. And then, you know, obviously I follow that account and try to engage with that account, you know, like pictures that they're posting and make comments and stuff like that.
And but use usually, their hashtags. Usually they have a custom.
Exactly. Usually those accounts will say kind of like what we say, you know, we tell you guys use the Tiny Shutter hashtag and maybe you'll get, you know, we'll pick your picture for the album art. The same kind of deal, you know, like there's an account that I follow. It's called Ohio Explored, and they have a hashtag, Ohio Explored. And I use that hashtag on like practically every photo that I upload to Instagram. And I can't even tell you now how many times I've been featured on that account. And that account has many, many, many followers. So that's great because that's many, many, many people that are seeing my picture. And I get more likes, and, you know, mostly I get tons of likes on that account. You know, it's like my picture gets, you know, 2,000 likes on the Ohio Explored account, whereas on my account, the same picture only gets like, you know, 150 or whatever.
Yeah.
But what that does for me is, you know, I get, you know, attribution on the Ohio Explored account, you know, like, check out this, you know, great image by M. Hoffman Photo. And then, you know, since M. Hoffman Photo ends up being a hot link, people click on that and it shoots them over to me. And then they could scroll through my feed and be like, ah, this guy has a lot of cool pictures, I'm going to follow him. So I pick up a lot of followers, which down the road increases the amount of likes that I get.
Yeah.
And I guess that's kind of what it's all about on Instagram, really, is, you know, getting likes. It's not so much about the likes. It's just that, you know, there's always bots to be accounted for and stuff like that. But in general, the more likes you're getting means the more people that are seeing your picture. And that's kind of the point, right?
Right.
Okay.
So there is a process of, you know, finding out the best, you know, services like that. You want to obviously check out, you know, let's see. So, all right. So like this Ohio group, I would say, you know, go in, see, you know, what their requirements are, you know, use this hashtag, follow the group. And those are the two biggest ones. See, you know, what kind of activity is happening in those groups? Like, if they're, are they properly attributing photographers? You know, that's one thing. What is the membership to that? Like, how many people are following this group is another thing to keep an eye on. If it's like only like 8 people, you know, don't even waste your time.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's something to check out. So yeah, absolutely. That is, one way. So I guess Joe and I had a wager as to, you know, how, you know, we would do this, and I can't even remember the wager. And, oh my God, I found a really cool, hey, if you're on Instagram right now, check out Becky Birder. And that's birder as in the bird. So it's Becky, BECKYBIRDER. She is a bird enthusiast, and she is ridiculously good at this. I can only imagine what kind of glass she's using. Anyway, that's a little bit of a tangent. You know, you're welcome, Becky. Not that she needs us. She has like over like a bazillion followers. So yeah, like, I think if you're looking to expand your Instagram audience, there are two things that you're going to need. You're going to need Instagram. That's the first one. But you're going to do a lot of legwork in Instagram as well, because Instagram is the only app that will give you a count as to, you know, how many people are using that particular hashtag. And then the other app that I use is the Notes app on your iPhone. And, you know, there's just no easy way about it. I suppose if you want to try an easy way, if you have your iPhone, you know, matched up with your Mac computer, then you can always use that Notes app and use a keyboard. And, you know, it's a little easier to type and stuff. But otherwise, you know, those are the two apps that I use. And I go into Instagram and I'll put in, like, you know, let's just use nature as the example. I'll type in nature and look up the hashtags. And Instagram will give you related hashtags. And so you could go into like nature lover, nature walks, nature this and that. And start looking at, you know, how many people are participating with those hashtags. And if, you know, you see like a healthy number, but not an anemic number or not like an inflated number, then, you know, copy and paste that into your notepad. And then, you know, make sure you keep it like a healthy track of them. I actually have a bunch of hashtags in a Google Doc where, you know, when it's time, I like, depending on the photos that I'm doing, like say I'm doing wedding photography, I have a whole document that's related to wedding photography hashtags. And, you know, when it's time to use that, I go and copy and paste that into the notepad on my Mac computer. That gets translated over to my iPhone. And then when I post a photo, I then copy the notepad and paste it into the, you know, the comment section of my Instagram, and boom, instant hashtags. And remember that they only allow 30 hashtags per post.
Yes, they do only allow 30. And let me touch on that real quick. Every time I see anything online, basically, that is about hashtagging in Instagram, everyone always says less is more. How does that even make sense? Right? That doesn't make any sense to me, like, at all. So I typically use all 30 hashtags that I'm allowed to use, because how do you know which hashtags are going to be the ones that are going to get you the most, that are going to make your photo the most visible? It's really right. Hard to know. So you may as well use more. Like less is more does not apply, in my opinion, when it comes to hashtagging in Instagram.
Right. And this is, I know this is something that you're doing, but when you're posting your photo, you know, put in the photo, put in a comment that, you know, hey, you know, here's an inspirational quote, or here's something about the photo. Whatever you're doing, type in something that you're planning to do, but do not put the hashtags in there just yet. Publish the photo, get it posted onto Instagram, and then immediately once it's posted, go into the comment section and put in your hashtags. This way, if you're sharing to Twitter or Facebook, people will see the photo, they will see the nice comment, but they will not be inundated with a bunch of hashtags that are kind of an eyesore. And by posting the hashtags in a follow-up comment, you're still getting your traffic that you need, or the potential traffic that you need, without being cumbersome, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I apologize. I lost you for a second there, so I didn't.
I lost you for a second.
Yeah, I would say I know what you were just talking about, and I would say that's really also kind of really important if you cross post from Instagram. So, you know, if you hit that little toggle to post your picture to like Facebook, you know, as well as, you know, uploading it to Instagram, like your Facebook friends are not going to want to see, you know, just a load of hashtags.
Right.
You know, they're going to want to read a short caption, you know, or some kind of short little blurb about the photo and not see a whole slew of hashtags.
Right. Bill in the chat room says, I've seen people using the app Tags for Likes. I just looked up hashtag Tags for Likes. That has over 200 million posts. I don't think that's going to work.
Yeah, I'm going to go with no.
Yeah. Unless there's an actual app, then I'm not familiar with that app. So, but again, it comes down to, you know, all the apps do is they'll show you the most popular, but they're not going to give you the important information to drill down and to really see what's happening under the hood. And, you know, maybe there's an easier way to do it, but right now, using Instagram, digging deep into their numbers and using a spreadsheet and the notepad is, you know, how I do it.
Yeah.
And so, again, I have it for my wedding photography account. I have it for, you know, my regular account, which, you know, you guys have seen countless waterfalls, no doubt. More than you ever want to see, probably. But, you know, if you're looking to, you know, become more popular or have more of a presence, I suppose, in Instagram, you got to do the legwork. You got to drill down, and there's no easy way about it that I know of anyway.
No, without a doubt. So, just a couple more thoughts on this. So, I would say maybe another way to kind of like find hashtags that might be more relevant is to like look at photos that are kind of similar to what you're doing, but from, you know, like accounts that have like a high following and get like, you know, like tons of likes.
Yeah.
You know, see what kind of hashtags they're using, you know, cause that's, to be honest with you, that's how I found a lot of the hashtags that I currently use a lot. You know, I started looking for people that were like in Ohio that were doing landscape kind of stuff. And then I started looking at, you know, how they were tagging their pictures. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. I mean, I didn't know, you know, about any of these hashtags. And
no, that's a good idea, because they might be using a hashtag that's not being recommended by, what's it called? Instagram itself. So yeah, that's another great way to find some.
And then, you know, a handful of weeks ago or however long ago it was that we talked about this briefly, and we kind of, I think it was you and I that had the wager, or maybe it was all three of us. So we were going to try out those apps and then see like who got the most increase in likes or something.
Yeah, I honestly have no memory of it.
Yeah, it was something to that effect. And at that time, I had downloaded an app called HashMe. And kind of right away, I knew it wasn't really going to work out for me, because really all it did was just kind of, you know, give me a list of kind of like similar, like really generic hashtags. As I think the way it worked is you just, I think you could upload a photo and then it would recommend hashtags, or you just put a hashtag in that fits with your picture, and then it just generates a list of kind of like similar hashtags, I guess.
Yeah. And if you are using one of those hashtag app generators, always look over what it's spitting out, because a lot of times, I would say in all of the cases, they try to put in their own hashtag, and
that
promotes themselves.
Yep, definitely.
So,
well, I have two different things here that I could like recommend, I guess, to try out. So one is a web-based like hashtag generator, I guess you could call it. It's called Display Purposes.
Uh-huh.
So if you go to displaypurposes.com, there's like a little search box, and you just type in like any word that you would use for a hashtag in a photo. And it'll generate a list, not necessarily of 30, but it'll just generate a list of like other potential hashtags that you could use along with that. So it's not really all that different from like some of the other hashtag things, but it, I just tried like a whole bunch of different words, and everything kind of like fit together. Like that HashMe app had like a lot of like weird stuff that didn't seem to really fit with like, you know, what I was trying to do.
Yeah.
So displaypurposes.com you could check out. And then there was another app that I saw on Petapixel, because I spend way too much time there. And I guess it used to be called DHaze.
Yes.
And now it is called Focal Mark. But it's another one of these you know, hashtag generating apps, but you know, you can enter in a keyword like into a search box, or you could kind of tell it like what style your photo is. So like, is it a landscape, a long exposure, is it, you know, a night shot, a portrait, you know, and then, or you can also tell it like where you took the picture. And then, you know, it generates a list of hashtags. So I tried it actually right before we got on this call to record the show. And it actually came up with a list of a lot of the hashtags that I already use, like all these like very specific like Ohio hashtags, like Ohio Explored, and a bunch of these other ones that are, you know, hashtags that are kind of specific to these feature accounts that I was talking about.
Yep.
So I thought that was really cool, because these are like hashtags that are going to get my picture, you know, noticed. It's not just these like generic hashtags that have, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of photos uploaded to them.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, those are just two things that I came across recently that you could try out, see if they work for you.
There you go. I think we set our piece on that one. We went long on that one, too. But, yeah, if there's something that you guys all find that works for you, definitely let us know. You know, just go into our Facebook group and chime in. You can find the link to that on tinyshutter.com, or leave a comment in the episode notes and share what you guys use. Definitely love to hear that. Or just hashtag your photos on Instagram with Tiny Shutter and mention it there. Right on. So let's say we go into post pick of the week, my friend.
Let's do it.
Every week, we love to go into our community and pick out the best of the best. And you could do so, you could participate in our weekly challenges by going to our Facebook group, not our Facebook page. It is our Facebook group. You could find the link on, like I said again, tinyshutter.com. And we have a link that goes straight to the group. Or if you go do a search on Facebook, it's iPhoneography, the Tiny Shutter group. Participate and join the club, because we have an enormous amount of people just piling into the group. Lately, we've been getting requests like oh my God, it's been so much per day.
Yeah.
I am super psyched about that. And, you know, the amount of photos that are coming in are just phenomenal. And after I get laid off tomorrow, I am going to have so much free time to go through the photos and check them out. But anyway, what is our challenge for this week?
All righty. Well, this past week, the challenge theme was early morning. So I did not participate because mornings are really not my thing. Actually, you know what? I'm kind of bummed out, because mornings right now, like this time of year, are totally awesome. You know, because a lot of times there's like around the water, there's like fog and mist and stuff. And there's been a lot of really like beautiful sunrises, but it's like right when I like really need to get to work. So I've been having I've been struggling with it. I want to stop and take pictures, but I'm just not able to.
Yeah, well, I won't have that problem anymore, so.
I'm almost jealous. But in any case, it did seem like quite a few of you guys were able to get out and enjoy some nice sunrises. That seemed to be kind of the theme in this in this challenge. There was definitely a lot of sunrise pictures, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that. So I kind of struggled with which one to pick here because there was definitely some really awesome shots, but ultimately I decided on a photo from Rob Santos, and he took his photo at 7:20 a.m. and says that he saw this scene in the side view mirror on his way to work in the morning, so he pulled over to get the shot, took the photo with a iPhone 5C and did a little bit of editing in Snapseed. But man, this is an epic picture. It's a square format sunrise picture. The sun is like just peeking over these clouds in the horizon. The sky's got this like just incredible orange glow. And you got a road going from the foreground off into the distance. And the sun is kind of like reflecting off the road. So the road's even got like some orange glow on it. And there's one car kind of in the midground that's driving away, so you could see the red tail lights of the car, and it's just a really cool image. It almost looks like something that should be like at the end of like a movie or something.
Yeah.
You know, they're driving off into the sunset, but obviously this is a sunrise, but in any case.
I'm sorry, I couldn't resist.
That's okay. In any case, this one really grabbed me. I like this shot a lot.
It's a really good photo. I really dig it. And to me, there is something that invokes a sense of loneliness in that photo. That solitary car, either going or coming from work, just really invokes that.
Yeah, that's totally what it is.
Yeah, and I think that haze from the morning sunrise just really adds to that loneliness. I don't know. That's just my vibe that I'm getting from it. I totally dig the photo, and congratulations. That is a super awesome photo.
All right. Well, now we need to come up with our theme for this week.
Unemployment. Well, no, just me. Literally just me.
I think I'm kind of like looking for ideas from the chat room and whatnot, like usual, but Halloween.
Yeah, you know what? That's not a bad one. Did we do fall as a theme?
No, you know why? Because we cater to the world.
You know what? That's right. I remember the reason for that. And our Australian folks are going into summertime right now.
Yes.
That is a very good reason. I remember now. David in the chat room says, too soon.
What about Halloween?
Oh, he meant Halloween. Yeah, Mary says too easy. I don't know. That Halloween might not be too easy. But is that kind of a United States thing too? Do other countries really care about it?
I don't know.
Yeah, neither do I. Maybe we should go more general and say something like, you know, maybe scary.
Yeah, okay. That would work. I mean, I'm pretty sure other countries do Halloween. You know, I'm sure Canada does, and you know, Mexico has the Day of the Dead and all that fun stuff.
They do have the Day of the Dead. That is actually pretty wild.
Yeah, that is cool.
And there is a subtle difference. Well, I don't think a subtle difference, actually. That's the wrong word to use. There's an obvious difference. In fact, my wife got these two like aluminum containers that were Day of the Dead decorated. And she's like, yeah, I got these for Halloween. I'm like, no, these are for the day after Halloween.
Yes.
And she's like, shut up.
Well, I actually have a Day of the Dead themed watch face on my Pebble watch right now.
Nice. And I have regret on my watch face, on my Apple watch, in that I regret buying this now that I have no job.
Well, you can always pawn it.
I could, but I don't want to.
Put it on eBay. I'll buy it.
There you go.
No, I won't. I like my Pebble.
You know, I really dig the watch. It's like the smartwatch is actually really good.
Cool. All right, so what do you say? Scary photos?
That's too scary.
Scary? Okay. All right, scary it is.
So there you go. Submit your scariest photos. Please do not post photos of political themes. While they are scary, it's not the kind of scary we want. I think it's the very definition of too soon. So there you go.
Cool. I'm looking forward to seeing this.
Right on. So I think we could call it a show. Hopefully next week, Joe will be back. Right now, he is off on a stunning adventure because his parents just flew in from California. And boy, are their arms tired.
Whoa!
All right.
I was really laughing at the boo.
That's the only way it was going to be funny. Anyway, so yeah, post your great photos. If you want to participate with this show, you can always go to tinyshutter.com and click on our live episode link, where it'll take you to Mixlr.com, where every Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time is where we do our live episodes. You can participate in the chat room. Have yourself a grand old time with our community here, because they are awesome, and they, they actually give us all ideas, and we take full credit for them. Spoiler, I'm being honest. It's a really cool group. A lot of fun to hear everybody's comments. If you want to participate in our photography group, just go over to tinyshutter.com one more time and click on the link to our Facebook group and join the fun. We have a huge community growing, and you could also check us out on Tiny Shutter TV, our YouTube channel, where I am going to actually probably post a lot more videos now. But we have a growing list of tutorials and, fun videos about iPhone photography, and that I'm trying to head up that side of the world. That's where I'm usually at if I'm not on the show itself. And Matt, where can they find you on the web?
All right, you can check me out on Instagram, and Twitter at mhoffmanphoto.
Awesome. And you can find me on Instagram as well. I am Mark Sadowski, and that's Mark with a C. So that is it. We will see you guys next week, and can't wait to see all the scary, crazy photos, and maybe they'll be Jurassic Park themed. That's right, Mr. Dinosaur. That's all. Take care.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, head over to iTunes and leave us a review and a 5-star rating. See you next week.
Dumb bastards.
This place is dead anyway, man.
Damn straight.